diminished. There are many ways to calibrate this growth, such as the burgeoning space in national newspapers, the way that stories have become front-page news, rarely the case 30 years ago, and how television content, particularly football, has soared in value. The question, however, is why? Why has sport, as a cultural institution, confounded the expectations of those who so confidently wrote it off? What has driven its growth in the teeth of myriad scandals, institutionalised cheating, and maladministration of a quite epic kind, not least within the Fédération Internationale de Football Association, FIFA, and the International Olympic Committee, IOC? What are the internal qualities of sport that make it so durable and cross-culturally intoxicating? This book of collected columns attempts to uncover some of the answers. It examines the way in which sport, while superficially frivolous, is underpinned by themes which are basic to the human condition. Heroism, drama, competition, hierarchy, psychology, morality, and perhaps most important of all, the quest for greatness. How do we become the best that we can be as individuals, teams, and organizations? Back in 2012, Tim Hallisey, the sports editor of The Times, telephoned to suggest that I travel out to ancient Olympia, the sanctuary in the Western Peloponnese where the original Olympics took place. It was a long trip, including getting lost on gravel roads with no signal to gain help from Google Maps. But it was, for me at least, a seminal experience. Standing above the sanctuary on the slopes of Mount Kronos, one could glimpse sport from a fresh vantage point. This festival was a central aspect of Greek culture and unified the warring city-states. Every 4 years, peace emerged so that athletes and spectators could travel to the games. For almost 1,200 years, it took place without a single interruption. Virtually no other cultural festival can match this kind of staying power. To put it a slightly different way, sport gripped the imagination of the ancient world just as it grips the modern. Sport isn't, in that sense, a post-romantic institution, one that started with the encoding of rules of play by Victorian schoolmasters and moralists, as is sometimes suggested. It didn't begin with the inauguration of FIFA, or the International Tennis Federation, or any of the other governing bodies which effectively operate as monopoly providers of the games and dominate today's landscape. No, sport is far more ancient and quintessential. I was struck by a quote from Lucian, the great historian, who wrote about his infatuation for the ancient games. "Oh, I can't describe the scene in mere words," he said. "You really should experience firsthand the incredible pleasure of standing in that cheering crowd, admiring the athletes' courage and good looks, their amazing physical conditioning, their unbeatable determination, and their unstoppable passion for victory." Couldn't this have been written about a great sporting event today? Could it not have been written about the Wimbledon final, a long-awaited Champions League showdown, or a fiercely contested test match? Doesn't it capture why we go through the turnstiles and tune in on television? And on the wider point, isn't it precisely because sport is simple, and in a certain sense, trivial, that we can so clearly perceive its dramatic qualities? It seems to transport us to what is essential about competition, and yes, the nature of greatness too. There were many pioneering athletes in the ancient world through whom these themes were personified. Milo of Croton, an associate of Pythagoras, won 5 men's wrestling titles between 536 and 520 BC. Choeroebus of Elis, a cook by profession, was the first Olympic champion by winning the stadion, 200 metres. Leonidas of Rhodes was an all-rounder, winning the stadion, the diaulos, 400 metres, and the hoplitodromos, 400 metres while carrying heavy armour, at 4 straight games from 164 BC. That's almost as many goals as Michael Phelps. Today, sport continues to produce cultural icons.